the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hello from Bedford. How are you all? Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, which is brought to you by Kraken. And today I've got an interview with Caitlin Long discussing the upcoming launch of Facebook's Libra coin. But before that, I got a message from my show sponsors. So first up, my lead sponsor Kraken, the best exchange for buying and selling digital assets, the only regulated spot and futures crypto exchange, and the only place I now use to buy and sell Bitcoin. They are the exchange I trust more than any, and it isn't just because they are a sponsor. They have such a deep focus on security. It means I trust them, especially with all the exchange hacks we've seen over the years. And it's booked in the diary. I'm going to be meeting up with Nick Pococo, Kraken's chief security officer, to discuss all things security related. So if you want to join me in supporting Kraken, head over to kraken.com, which is kraken.com. That is kraken.com, which is kraken.com. Next up, BlockFi, my oldest sponsor. They've been with me since August and they extended again. We've got such a great relationship. I'll be meeting up with them when I'm in New York, talking about the future products which is coming up, which is great. But they've already got two amazing products in the market. They've got their interest accounts and their crypto-backed loans. And with their interest accounts, they recently announced support for the Gemini stablecoin across the platform. BlockFi interest account clients at launch will be eligible to earn 6.2% APY, which is paid monthly on balances over 2,500 GUSD. Balances over 100,000 GUSD will earn a tiered rate of 1.5% APY. BlockFi also offers GUSD as a funding option and as collateral for institutional crypto borrowers. BlockFi's USD loan rates start as low as 4.5%, and it's definitely something I'm going to be testing when I have the chance to set it up, and I will feedback to you on that. If you want to check out either of their products, head over to BlockFi.com, which is BlockFi.com. That is BlockFi.com, which is BlockFi.com. Okay, so on to my interview with Caitlin, and this is going to be a short turnaround because we only did the interview yesterday, so I'm just going to rattle through this. But with the white paper for Libra being released today and following Caitlin's Forbes article discussing her six predictions of Libra, I thought it would be great to get Caitlin on, and she's the perfect person for this. The article was in the show notes, as is a tweet storm she put out discussing this. But in the interview, from interest to regulation, we discuss the impact that Libra coin may have, as well as talking about how it could be great for Bitcoin. So if you've got any questions about the show, do feel free to reach out to me. And just a couple of notes, I'm going to be heading out to the States on Wednesday, and next week I will be emceeing the Bitcoin 2019 conference alongside the amazing Naomi Brockwell in San Francisco. So hopefully I'll get to meet a bunch of you there. And also I announced that on July the 3rd, well, around that date, depends on the Apple approval times, but I'm going to be launching my new podcast, the Defiance Podcast, a sister show to What Bitcoin Did, which is going to focus on topics such as censorship, human rights, sex workers, the drugs war, and also Bitcoin. It is a Bitcoin show, but the Bitcoin topics will be loose and softer, and it also discusses other subjects. So, yep, looking forward to getting that out. Keep an eye out for that. And if you want to support the podcast, you want to support what I do, just head over to my website, which is whatbitcoindid.com, and click on the support section. It'll explain everything you can do. Okay, I hope you enjoy the interview. If you've got any questions, feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Good morning, Caitlin. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Peter. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for agreeing to do this. This is your second time on. Your last show you did with me is still, I think it's still in top three or four podcasts I've done.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. Well, hey, there's a lot going on out here in Wyoming, and there's even more coming. So it's great to stay in touch with you. We'll hopefully continue to work together in the future as well.
Yeah, hopefully. And I think I'm going to try and come out to the Wyoming blockchain week. Is it 21st to the 23rd or something of September?
Yes, it's that weekend. And we're starting on Thursday with a Wyoming Blockchain Task Force meeting. There is a conference both for business people and developers, two separate tracks. And then we'll have the hackathon. And along with the hackathon is the Sandcastle Challenge, where the top two teams are guaranteed entrance into Dubai 2020. So I definitely hope your listeners will think about coming out, kick the tires on Wyoming. A lot of folks are thinking of doing that. Kraken is our lead sponsor. I know they're a big supporter of your podcast as well. Very, very similarly philosophically aligned, and they keep spending time out in Wyoming. So I can't can't vouch for what their plans are, but they're busy people. So you can read something into that and let them announce it whenever that timing is ready.
And you can confirm for me that Wyoming is real. It does exist.
Yes. Oh, it definitely is real. It's really funny. That that meme got started in the 1980s before social media came along. It was a Garfield cartoon, and it was actually really funny. And for whatever reason, it out there in social media, the meme just never died. And so a lot of folks are questioning whether Wyoming exists. But Brittany Kaiser is she's the Facebook whistleblower, and she has publicly announced that she's moved to Wyoming, and there will be others who will as well. So stay tuned. This is not an overnight thing. I realize that the concept of moving to a new place and or relocating a company as opposed to just registering the business, those are major decisions, and they take time. But it does feel like we've got momentum. We've already raised as much money this year for the hackathon, and we're 3 months ahead. It's still 3 months out. And we already raised the same amount as we did last year. And the great thing about it is it's a nonprofit. It's not one of these, for-profit events where the event sponsors, really are the ones who do well. This is a nonprofit. The University of Wyoming is making its facilities available to us for free. And that means that the developers actually take the money. So we paid out in prize money last year more than most of the big hackathons did. And wow. And I think we're going to be able to do the same this year. It's a real hackathon for developers. And as Marshall Long put out on his Twitter, this was the best hackathon he attended last year. So I'm really hoping that we get lots more attendance this year. Everybody save the date. And Peter, it would be great if you come out as well and kick the tires out here.
Yeah, I think almost certainly I'm going to. I'm definitely going to try. I like the way you're putting Wyoming on the map with your dedication. I'm trying to do the same with Bedford, but we don't really have a center of blockchain here. It's pretty much my podcast.
Yeah, you do a great job. Yeah, and let's hope that this show meets those standards with regard to this Facebook topic, which is a hot topic for sure.
Yeah, what a topic. And also, look, the podcast recently, I made a decision to focus on Bitcoin for a number of reasons, but I do think the Facebook project is highly relevant to Bitcoin. And you noted that in your article, which, by the way, I read through this morning. I've tweeted it out. I also read through all the comments on the tweet. And one of the interesting things is that I don't think I'm alone in this, in that I have this kind of, I'm on the fence with it. I can see so many positives for it, but there's also a number of things that I naturally worry about, probably mainly because of the history Facebook have had with, questionable ethics towards privacy. What are your kind of general feelings before we dig into this?
Well, I have the same view. There are definitely pros and cons. I'm not rah-rah Facebook, but I'm also not completely rejecting it. It absolutely is something that is a double-edged sword, and it's not black and white. There are going to be benefits to Bitcoin from Facebook. Literally, they're making cryptocurrency a mainstream word, and they are making it. It's funny, in the Wyoming Blockchain Coalition, I've always been careful to use the word blockchain because I felt like that was more of a mainstream accepted word instead of cryptocurrency. Now that Facebook is using the word cryptocurrency, that word, I think, will become more mainstream, just in the vernacular, much less the actual use and getting people used to the idea of digitally scarce money. Now, Facebook's coin is not going to be scarce. And so I do believe that over time, people will do the same thing they did, as Nick Spanos pointed out in Venezuela, when he visited Venezuela, that once people got educated about what cryptocurrency is, that they naturally look for the best one that's going to retain the most value over time, that has the best stock to flow ratio. And that is Bitcoin. And there are other cryptocurrencies are, of course, going to benefit from that coattail effect as well. But, I also think this is a detour, kind of like, to use Andreas's analogy, it's the intranet before internet. We've even seen it in this industry. It's blockchain, not Bitcoin, but people are coming full circle back around to Bitcoin. These are detours that are ultimately helpful to gaining adoption and wider support, but they're not where we end up. And I think we will end up in Bitcoin. As I've said, I'm a Bitcoin maximalist, just like probably most of your readers. I just think it's going to take a couple of decades before we get there. And we will have these detours that the more short-term maximalists look at and shake their heads and say, waste of time. But right now we're just not there yet in Bitcoin with the user experience. And I think in the meantime, Facebook and others like Telegram, who are going to be doing similar things, are going to be helping to adopt by helping to educate what cryptocurrency really is. And that is, at the end of the day, a good thing for Bitcoin.
I think I pretty much agree with everything you said there. And I think the best way to go through this will be to work through your predictions, because they're a solid framework for discussing the Facebook coin. And I know it's Libra, but I actually find it easier to call it Facebook coin. I don't know why. But there are a couple of things I just want to cover before we do that. So I initially thought this would be a dollar-pegged stable coin, but it's actually been confirmed that it will be tied to a basket of fiat currencies. So my first question around that is, will it be its own currency then, not pegged to a specific currency?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And I think you're absolutely right. Yes, it will. Just like Bitcoin is its own currency, and I don't know where it ranks in the market value of all the global currencies, but last I looked, it was in the top 20, I believe, by value. And I think Libra is going to be right there as well. And it's going to work like a central bank. It's basically a private version of a central bank. That's how I think about it. They're going to be managing reserves against the liability for them will be the people who own the coins, and they will be managing the reserves against that. It's going to be very interesting to see how they peg it. I think the fact that it's not a dollar proxy 100% means that when they said in one of, I think it was the information story, there was a confirmation that they are going to be marketing this in the developing world. This is going to be a developing world concept, probably more than a developed world concept. I was thinking also in preparation for talking with you, you know, Americans are just not used to foreign exchange risk. The dollar is priced in, oil is priced in gold. Most foodstuffs and commodities are priced in dollars. Basically, there is no foreign exchange risk, right? Our oil and our food and other commodities are dollar based, whereas Europeans are used to that, especially in the UK. You're more used to the notion of currency fluctuations. So my guess is this is mostly an emerging market phenomenon, secondarily a European phenomenon, and lastly a US phenomenon.
There's going to be a UX issue for them with this, though, because if they are partly in, for example, they can compete with Venmo as an easy way to send money back and forth in, say, WhatsApp or Messenger, people are used to sending dollars back and forth with that. But if this is its brand new currency, there's going to be a UX issue with people understanding the exchange rate and how much value they're holding at a specific time. So I'm kind of interested how they're going to play that.
Yes, but again, I think that's why it was significant that they announced that they're marketing this in the developing world, where there is a desire to use a more stable store of value. So I wouldn't be shocked if this is primarily a dollar proxy, because in the developing world, lots of folks want to store value in dollars more so than in euros or Swiss francs or yen, for example. But we'll have to see what that basket is. And moreover, that basket is not going to remain constant. I did say in the article that this foundation, who is going to be figuring out what the dollar or what the currency peg is for Libra and then implementing it over time. So they're going to be trading to maintain reserves in a percentage basis that matches what they've told their customers is in the basket. That foundation is going to be a very powerful force within capital markets, just based on the scale that we're talking about, assuming that, you know, a decent percentage of Facebook's almost 2.4 billion monthly active users ultimately end up using this. I think WhatsApp has 1.6 billion users, right? So we're talking about enormous potential scale here. And that's why I think that foundation is going to have enormous power in capital markets. It's going to be a force to be reckoned with, no question.
Right. Well, let's work through the predictions then. So we'll start with number one. Facebook's cryptocurrency will be a powerful force for good in developing countries, which is where Facebook intends to market the product, which you've already mentioned. Because the power behind it is a borderless currency without fees, as you noted. Is this going to therefore also be bad for the likes of PayPal and Western Union and other transfer services?
Yes, absolutely. But it's wonderful for the people living in the developing world, because it's going to indirectly create pressure on their central banks not to devalue their currencies. So this is where I think it can be a powerful force for good, just simply because it's going to retain its value better than most currencies. The obvious examples are Venezuela, Zimbabwe, but you know, even Argentina, which has done a better job in recent years, it's still devaluing faster than I suspect the Libra's value will.
Does that put a risk on these local currencies, though, in that if people start using Libra quite a lot, could that actually devalue the local currency because it's not being used? Is there anything in that?
Yes, and I suspect that the developing world central banks are nervous about this. The developed world central banks don't seem to be as nervous. We'll get to that in a moment. But absolutely, but this is going to take power away from them. It's Friedrich Hayek's denationalized money. And it is the optimistic view of cryptocurrencies is that there's not a nation state here. There is a large, powerful corporation. We'll talk about that in a moment. But there's not a nation state issuing this, and so it's powerful in the sense that it does create competition for those local currencies, and that competition is going to create indirect pressure on those central banks to maintain the value of their currencies for exactly the reason you asked the question.
See, this is the reason I like it.
Yep.
When I hear things like this, I start to think, okay, this is a power for good. Even if it is got this huge company behind it, it can be a power for good, especially as you said, in specific countries where they have seen, you know, mass inflation. One of the things, though, I do think about is, do you think there's a chance that this will be banned in countries?
Yes. Absolutely. And this is the risk that I think Mark Zuckerberg is taking with Facebook, that all of a sudden by making this, by getting into money, that it potentially creates the opportunity, the risk that Facebook itself and WhatsApp and Instagram and the like are banned in countries, right? Facebook is not usable in China, which is why WeChat ended up developing the way that it did. And Facebook obviously gets to see the use that WeChat gets in China. It's ubiquitous. Last time I went to China, it was very difficult to spend paper money there as a foreigner. You really had to essentially pay the money to a local and they would use their phone to purchase things for you. That it's basically ubiquitous. And that's clearly what Facebook is going after here. But I'm sure they're very aware that in certain countries, the dictators are likely to ban Facebook if it becomes too powerful.
Right. Okay. I wonder if they can ban the use of the currency without banning Facebook itself.
That's a good question. You know, in Bitcoin, it is censorship resistant, right? This is a huge difference between Facebook and Bitcoin. And this is part of the reason why, ultimately, I think this has positive boomeranging effects for Bitcoin, because people will realize that, you know, if Facebook becomes too much of a threat, if Libra specifically becomes too much of a threat to the local central banker who is devaluing the currencies, then people will now understand there is a real alternative and it's called Bitcoin. So I think this is not a problem for Bitcoin. This is, you know, ideally everybody would adopt Bitcoin overnight, but it hasn't happened. Facebook's going to accelerate that. And people are smart, especially in the parts of the world where folks are used to foreign exchange risk. They will look for the best store of value, and it's not going to be Libra.
Well, that's why one of the things I'm excited about is the Libra Bitcoin chart, because on a long enough time scale, that chart will even show that Libra is devaluing against Bitcoin.
Absolutely. Independently, since I came from Wall Street, I spent a lot of time looking at financial market indicators. There's a great analyst whose stuff I read, especially anytime we get into choppy financial markets. His name is Jeff Snyder at Alhambra Investment Partners. And then also another one, Doug Noland at Credit Bubble Bulletin. And both of these guys are on the notion that, you know, central bank balance sheets are going to be expanding. And in Jeff's case, he's saying they're way behind the curve of what's happening in the world. And in Doug's case, he predicted that in the next crisis, which he's expecting is coming relatively soon, that the Fed's balance sheet is going to expand to $10 trillion. It reached a $4.5 trillion peak in the previous financial crisis. Now, when Doug predicted that a couple of weeks ago, I came out and said, I think he's way low. It's going to be that much bigger than we think, because there's so much tinder that's been built up in financial markets right now that we don't know what the spark is. We don't know when it's going to come. Maybe it never comes, but it's pretty likely that the Fed is going to have to come to the rescue. And it won't just be the Fed. It will be the major central banks of the world. So it's, you know, again, Facebook's Libra Foundation is going to be right in the middle of that financial storm. And they're going to have to manage the value of Libra against volatile developed world currencies when that eventually happens. And you will see, again, this is where Bitcoin wins. You will see the devaluation of Libra as a result of the devaluation of those developed world currencies when that eventually happens. Just none of us know what the precise timing is for sure. But that's, again, that's when Bitcoin wins.
It's funny because we're seeing the nature of money itself change before our very eyes, not only with Libra and Bitcoin, but well, actually primarily with Libra and Bitcoin. It's a complete and fundamental change to what money is and what money means to people.
Yes. And Jeffrey Tucker wrote a very beautiful article. He's such a beautiful writer over the weekend on the AIER website about Libra. And he called it the dollar's killer app. And again, he's just like us. He's a Bitcoin fan, but he's recognizing that this is a potentially valuable detour that actually helps Bitcoin in the end. And he's talking here about, we haven't had any real innovation in money and payment systems in 50 years. And now we've got all this innovation happening right around us. And that's a good thing. It's creating competition in money, and we're getting market forces to come out and actually allow people to have alternatives with regard to payment systems. PayPal never really worked because, and same thing with Western Union, never really worked because they had to use the existing payment rails. And Libra is obviously not going to be using ACH and similar central bank payment systems. So this is a big advancement in technology, and it's going to give power to a lot of people in the world. I just think the developed world folks are not necessarily going to be the big beneficiaries of it yet, anyway.
What are the downside risks? Do we have a downside risk of central banks not having total control over parts of the monetary system?
Well, I happen to think that's a positive, but...
No, I understand the positives, and I'm thinking more, could it be a violent transition?
Well, sure, it could be. We don't know how this is all going to play out. But to me, the biggest downsides are more Facebook-specific. And I'll start by saying, Terry Kibbe gave me a great line. She's a freedom-oriented person, and she said, conservatives fear big government. Progressives and liberals fear big business. Freedom-loving people fear what happens when big government and big business collude. And I just love that quote because it just puts everything into perspective. We've feared the central banks. Now we actually have big business potentially colluding with the central banks and partnering, at least, is maybe a better word for it. But this is the downside. That we actually have something that the governments and central banks apparently have given blessing to, and that this is going to be the one that they're going to accept, and that may actually cause them, because they have accepted one, to crack down even harder on the truly decentralized cryptocurrencies. And that gets to some of the other issues that people have flagged, one of which is, of course, the antitrust issue. Facebook banned cryptocurrency ads. Well, were they just foaming the runway for the introduction of their own cryptocurrency? There's a major antitrust question there. And I raised the article in the issue in the Forbes article will there be some sort of cooperation between Facebook and governments that gets them off their antitrust issue because they're going to agree to turn over all the data to the governments? What's going to happen, moreover, when people get deplatformed from Facebook for censorship reasons? This is clearly not a censorship-resistant cryptocurrency, right? So how's Facebook going to handle that? Is your money going to be trapped like it is in a bank where you have to jump through a million hoops just to get access to your own money? These are major questions, major. And the thing I'm going to be looking at most with the introduction and in the next few months, how the governments handle this, is did Facebook get some sort of special treatment relative to other crypto startups that have had a lot of problems with regulators because the government has decided that this is the one that they're going to back? And if so, is it all about wanting to get access to track every financial transaction ever done? There is a big crackdown. We just saw it at the G20 meeting. It's coming at the end of June from the Financial Action Task Force, which is a global organization that was created to try to keep the financial system stable after the financial crisis. They're going to significantly increase anti-money laundering and anti-terrorism financing surveillance on the financial system. We've seen this spoken about at, for example, the Consensus Conference last month. The Undersecretary of Treasury in the United States basically painted the picture that not only do all cryptocurrency transactions have to embed information about the beneficial owner in them, and literally, someone asked her, wait a minute, that you can't retroactively change a protocol to require that. And she said, well, that's your problem, essentially. But moreover, she also said that She didn't explicitly say she wants to track every financial transaction, but here's how she laid it out. She talked about suspicious activity reports, which banks have to file in the United States for every transaction of $10,000 or more. She then went on to say that the average terrorist financing transaction is $600, and we should all agree that no terrorist should ever be able to use the financial system for terrorism financing. So the implication is, of course, they want to be able to track everything, and every financial institution is not just tracking $10,000 payments and above, they're tracking everything to ensure that terrorists don't use the system, right? So there's a big clash coming between the truly decentralized, permissionless, censorship-resistant cryptocurrencies and these more government-approved versions. This is a long-winded way of saying I suspect that a bigger crackdown is coming on the censorship resistant versions, precisely because they now have a non-censorship resistant version that has been approved.
I think I took this from your article, but in an era where a radicalized suicide bomber can bring a tragic end to the lives of hundreds for nothing more than a price of duct tape, a vest, and supplies, we cannot afford to allow money to flow to terrorists.
Right. She didn't say we cannot afford to allow any money, but that is clearly the implication. Yes, they want to track every transaction. Yes.
Yeah, see, that takes us into that kind of scary dystopian 1984 Orwellian future where everything is tracked. And I don't know, it kind of gets a bit weird. So that's where I go into the area where I'm like, I don't really want to use Libra.
Right.
I might want to use it, say, for example, say my, you know, a couple of years, my son's traveling and he needs some money. He's like, Dad, can you send me £500? Something like Libra would be great, right? But personally, I can't see me wanting to keep a significant amount of money in there and using it for my transactions for buying things, because I don't know, I find it kind of weird and scary.
Well, and you know, right now the governments, I'm sure, are mapping all of the people with whom we have social media relationships, whether we know them or not, just people that we're connected with, right? And now what's going to happen is they're going to be able to use those maps to trace who we do business with as opposed to who we communicate with. So you could get, you could hire a plumber to come over, pay them in Libra. If the plumber happens to be a terrorist, all of a sudden you're caught in that web, and you didn't do anything wrong. And you know, one of the arguments that has always driven me crazy about the financial privacy point is, well, if I didn't do anything wrong, I have nothing to hide. Well, the problem is that you may get inadvertently caught in these webs without knowing it, completely innocently. And then all of a sudden, your transactions could be deplatformed. So it really is a dangerous slippery slope. I'm quite surprised, to be honest, that the Trump administration, which has undergone a deregulation approach, is allowing the ratcheting up of the financial transaction surveillance state. And I wrote an earlier Forbes piece back when the Supreme Court case came out in the U.S. called Carpenter, which said that the U.S. government cannot turn a private business, in that case it was Verizon, the cell phone data company, into a data dragnet for itself, that it actually has to go get a warrant and have probable cause, prove probable cause to a judge that there was a crime committed before the government can get access to that data. And I think that when these financial surveillance programs are tested through the U.S. court system, that they will be struck down as being unconstitutional for the exact same reason that the cell phone data surveillance programs were struck down. But that's going to take years. And in the meantime, it's what the Austrian school folks like to say. We don't know what the opportunity cost of business, lawful business that was prevented from all of these regulations is. And so while there's a lot of upside for denationalized money and for, as we were talking about earlier, the discipline that's going to be coming to developing world central banks, those are all positives. On the flip side, the surveillance state opportunities, both from big business and big government here, are really scary. And they're going to get more prominent in the next few years, not less.
Who would actually challenge this? Because you said you don't think it would survive a constitutional challenge, but who would likely challenge this?
Well, so that's where I think the crackdown on the true crypto industry is going to come, right? So here's one scenario that I think is likely. This is the cryptocurrency that's deemed okay. And so everybody else now has to fall in line with these same regulations. And Bitcoin, you know, it's your problem that the protocol doesn't allow embedding of beneficial owner information transaction in every transaction, right? So that's the attitude that the regulators are going to take. We know they can't shut it down. We know they can't force a change like that. But it's just going to be a very difficult period, because I think there is going to be more crackdown on the truly decentralized systems, and there is going to be for the crypto exchanges and money transmitters, there's going to be a lot higher surveillance that's going to be coming into play as a result of these new rules that are likely to be enacted.
So Facebook coin could be good for Bitcoin, but at the same time, it also could bring greater scrutiny, a greater lens over it.
Yep.
But it could make it stronger as well.
It could. You know, there's a very interesting article or a letter that I read from the U.S. Senate Banking Committee that they sent to Facebook back in March, when news was breaking that this project was coming. And they were concerned because apparently Facebook asked a lot of the US banks for customer information. And we don't know if the banks actually shared the customer information, but where the Senate Banking Committee was going was they were concerned that Facebook was going to use the customer information and all of its power to essentially create a social credit scoring system in the United States, and that would discriminate against folks that historically have been discriminated against. So they were very focused on the Fair Credit Reporting Act, and was Facebook's entry into this market going to create a whole new means by which folks can be discriminated against? So I actually take some solace in the fact that the U.S. Senate Banking Committee is going down that path, because they're saying, no, we don't want that to happen. They're not saying that they respect financial privacy. They're saying we want to make sure Facebook doesn't discriminate against protected classes. But that's better than where China ended up, right? There is no such process in the social credit scoring system in China to ensure that folks are not discriminated against. So I see some rays of hope, if you will, that the U.S. isn't going to completely replicate what WeChat has done in terms of creating a social credit score where you've got a big company with a big government partner that effectively is forcing a change on the financial system and making it essentially very difficult for anyone to dissent.
Next up, I talked to Caitlin Moore about the launch of Libra, but before that, I do have a message from my show sponsors. So Dropbit, the best Bitcoin wallet I've used. Have you downloaded it yet? They've been sponsoring the show for a while now. Have you tried it out? If you have, let me know. Let me know what you think of it. They've also got a really cool announcement coming soon. I can't wait to tell you about that. But I've got a great relationship with the team. They're always listening to feedback, so if you've got any, do let me know. And they are also sponsoring another event for me in San Francisco at Bitcoin 2019. So keep an eye out for that. If you're in town and you want to come, let me know. But why should you check out Dropbit? It's funny, with the launch of Facebook's Libra coin and talking about the impact on things like Venmo, Dropbit for me is like a Bitcoin Venmo. It's such an easy way to send and receive Bitcoin, and you can do it in so many different ways. You can paste the address in, or you can do it by sending it to a phone number. It's all super cool, so definitely go and check it out. It's got great UX, and it's an amazing product with an amazing team. If you're interested in finding out more, head over to dropbit.app, which is dropbit.app. That is dropbit.app, which is dropbit.app. And lastly, and definitely no means least this week, is Accounting, my newest sponsor. If you're taking your tax seriously with your crypto holdings, you definitely need to check them out. And they also have one of the best portfolio managers available, and it's free to use. You only pay for your tax report at the end. And they have the best price tax tool in the market. I've been playing with it, and I've got to commend them. They've got a new website out. The UX is amazing. They've upgraded the tool recently, and they've built something that's just so easy and beautiful to use. I'm always a fan of good UX, and Accounting have absolutely nailed it. I would highly recommend you try it out yourself. And it also doesn't just calculate your tax. It optimizes your trading decisions to ensure you trade the right coins at the right time to reduce your tax burden. And you can import data from all major exchanges and wallet providers. So it's an absolute no-brainer. To optimize your tax and portfolio, head over to accounting.com, which is accounting.com. That is accounting.com, which is accounting.com. It's almost impossible to imagine Facebook could create this without having top level conversations with the government. I mean, we know they've met with Mark Carney and we know they've met with the US Treasury, but I find it very difficult to believe they would go down the route of creating this without some kind of pre-approval at some level.
Yes, I would agree with that. I don't have any insight better than anybody else, but it's pretty obvious that something this big and meaningful will have been pre-cleared, no question, in my mind. We'll see. I mean, I think there are going to be some regulatory issues. So one of the other issues that I raised in the article, I went out on a limb and said Facebook's going to pay interest to its users. Now, yep. By saying that, I know full well that in the beginning, they're unlikely to do that. And here's why. Because if they do pay interest, then under U.S. law, Libra is a security, most likely. Under the Howey test, it would be considered an investment contract. So the challenge then becomes, if it is a security, then you need a brokerage account to use it to buy a cup of coffee, which is absurd. So on the one hand, I think it's great that Facebook is essentially going to crystallize that debate, which has caused a lot of folks in the broader crypto industry to have real problems creating truly decentralized systems that happen to run afoul of U.S. securities laws, and the SEC is going after them. And some of those U.S. securities laws are absurd. They were just, securities laws were written back when securities were pieces of paper, and they were not meant to be used to, they weren't meant to be consumed. They weren't meant to be used in any sort of consumptive purpose, right? And now we have things that might be securities, but they are definitely designed for consumptive purpose. And so there's a clash in the law in the United States, and Facebook may trip over that line. But here's the flip side of that. If they don't trip over that line and they deliberately avoid being a security, then they can't pay interest, and then they pocket all of that money. And this is where the populists in the United States, I think, are going to be screaming. because Facebook is essentially, and this is where you and I chatted about the Barclays analyst who estimated that Facebook could make $19 billion in profit from Libra. And it's all coming from interest income. It's earning basically the interest income that it would not be paying to users of the currency, Facebook gets to pocket. And that is going to cause, like you said in the beginning, a whole new conversation about money, because why is Facebook pocketing the float as opposed to paying it to its customers? And especially given that it will have bank partners, there is corporate welfare at the heart of the US financial system, and Facebook's going to be helping itself to that till and not sharing it with its users. This thing's going to become a hot potato. And the bigger it gets, the bigger the dollar value. And again, I suspect the Senate Banking Committee is going to be hauling Facebook in front of it for testimony on fairness issues. And it's just going to unveil the whole mess that we have in the unfair financial system in the United States. And if they don't unveil it, then they are implicitly supporting a corporate welfare program for Facebook.
Well, yeah. So this is, we're on your second prediction now that you said you'd pay interest to holders of the cryptocurrency. And in that you said, and this will eventually lead to populist calls to repeal corporate subsidies to banks at the heart of the US banking system. Can you explain that latter part to me? Because this is something that was new to me when I read the article.
So since the financial crisis, the Federal Reserve has been paying the banks not to lend money. And the way they've been doing that is literally just conjuring up new dollars out of thin air, right? The Fed is a special type of bank that can write checks on itself. And so they create dollars. They dilute every single holder of US dollars. And that to the tune this year of $36 billion, which to put it into perspective is about half of the size of the food stamp program for welfare recipients in the United States, right? So the banking industry is being paid for taking no risk and doing nothing. They're being paid $36 billion in welfare payments. And by partnering with banks, Facebook is going to get access to some of that.
Wow. Okay. That's very interesting. But they could also end up becoming like a bank themselves.
Yes.
If you're holding Libra and you're gaining interest, I mean, this is essentially a very small version of a bank account.
That's exactly right. And it's interesting to me that Facebook is going in this direction. I was actually listening to your podcast with the gentleman from Microsoft who's doing decentralized identity over the weekend, which I thought was a fantastic podcast.
Yeah, Daniel Buckner. He's great.
Yes. Yes. And he said something interesting, which is that, you know, Facebook and Google, the ad revenue supported businesses, really are going to be facing a pickle when it comes to decentralized identity, because they make money by selling your identity information, your spending habits, your personal preferences and the like. Once we can get all that encrypted and decentralized, their revenue model really comes into question, right? And so he was making the distinction that Microsoft, because they don't have an ad-supported revenue model, is a logical place for putting a decentralized identity protocol, and then Microsoft can build services and sell software on top of that, or maybe Apple, which is makes money off the hardware and not ad-supported revenue, which is why its system has been historically more secure. This is another distinction, right? So you're getting this real split in the tech among big tech. You've got the folks that are ad revenue supported and the folks that are not, and so this is going to be interesting because Facebook basically has to, as decentralized identities come down the pike, they have to find a way to remain relevant. Otherwise, they may be disrupted by decentralized identity. And as a result, they're pivoting toward financial services to try to create another revenue stream from all that data that they have on all of us that they won't be able to monetize as effectively in the future as we start to gain decentralized identities.
Well, yeah, because privacy has become a competitive tool. Apple are going to be providing their sign-in with Apple, which will use random anonymized email addresses to protect your privacy. So all these apps and tools that we've been using to provide data about our identity, which is also then being sold and shared on the market, that whole model is going to change. And quite interestingly, so I think you'll enjoy my podcast that went out last week with Jeremy Welch from Casa, because that originally started as a conversation about the ad tech industry, because he did a long tweet storm where he believes a number of things, GDPR, Bitcoin, and politics is going to lead to a massive change in the ad tech industry. And I also wrote quite a while ago about, I wrote an article called The Decentralized Threat to Advertising, in that yep. as we have a more private web, which I believe what Web3 is going to be about, is going to be about privacy. Suddenly all these companies are not going to have access to all this data, which they have been using to target us with advertising. On top of that, though, I also think there's another problem with Facebook. I think the novelty of it has worn off. I think, you know, it was fun, it was new, it was interesting, but a lot of people I speak to aren't using it anymore. And I think in yes. the US alone, over the last year, they've lost 17 million users. So the writing's on the wall from as a product. I think they've milked as much advertising as they can out of it. The ads aren't working so well. And then we're moving towards a more private web. So I think moving into financial services is a clever next step for them. But the privacy side of things is going to be really super interesting.
Right. And I think it's a defensive step, to your point. Those of your listeners who are financial markets people will understand that financial services companies trade at much lower valuations, much lower multiples of earnings or cash flow than tech companies do. Right. So Facebook's seeing the writing on the wall, and it is absolutely on the defense. And again, back to the earlier point, one of the things that I fear, because they are on the defense on antitrust as well, is that they end up circling back and saying and cutting the Faustian bargain, where they'll basically, you know, give governments whatever data they want, and or maybe even enter into tax reporting arrangements, right? Libra, just for your U.S. listeners, is considered a capital asset under U.S. tax law. And that means that you have to report capital gains and capital losses for every single transaction you make. There is no de minimis exemption. So when you buy a cup of coffee, that's triggering a tax reporting obligation. And Facebook will probably have to file all those tax reports. And the way the tax system has evolved is that Facebook, you know, most employers, actually all employers, send that information to the governments themselves. They don't rely on individuals to report it. Honestly, all that information gets directly sent to the IRS, and then the IRS checks you to verify that you have been honestly reporting your taxes. Facebook's going to be doing the same thing, right? So that's the Faustian bargain that I think may be coming, that they basically get some runway against all of the antitrust issues by agreeing that they're just going to do all this tax reporting for and providing all that information and surveillance for governments.
It sounds like an administrative nightmare.
Well, by the way, that's what the financial industry faces today.
Yeah.
And even businesses. You know, one of the things that we tried to fix in Wyoming was the issue that if a company loses its bank account, regardless of whether it's a crypto company or a porn company or a gaming company or a firearms company, right? And any sort of politically incorrect industry faces the risk that the banks stop banking them. The problem in the United States is if the customer loses their bank account, the company loses their bank account, they're out of business, because U.S. rules require that withholding taxes are remitted to the IRS electronically, which requires you to have a bank account. So if you don't have a bank account, you can't be in business. So it is scary the way the financial sector has been weaponized, and how much it really does collude with the government already, almost by force. But now Facebook is going to be, you know, presumably doing all that tax reporting on our behalf, just like the banks do.
They could also, as we said, become some kind of bank. They could become some kind of global bank, which you could see some benefits for. For example, if you move country, you would still be able to leave your money in this kind of Libra Facebook bank. But at the same time, I think there's a huge amount of risk in leaving too much money in something like a Libra bank account, because like you said, you know, if your account is closed down, you know, if you're censored, you could suddenly lose access to all this money.
Yes, that's right. And it's going to be interesting to see how Facebook handles that. If they deplatform you, do you get your money back? Or does it get confiscated under some sort of a civil asset forfeiture law, which is another law that the U.S. has? And again, I suspect that in other countries, something is similar. The police, if you're suspected of committing a crime, it is actually legal for them to confiscate your property. So, and you may not be able to get it back.
Yeah, we have that in the UK as well now. We've got a law, I can't remember what it is, but you have to, it's like some suspicion. Like if you can't, oh, I can't remember, it came out recently because the wife of a banker who had been based out of, I think it was out of Kuwait, or you might have been working for a large company, but anyway, they couldn't find out where all their money had come from. So they've had to forfeit all this jewelry and all these other things. So, you know, we have it here in the UK as well. Okay, it's going up to your third prediction. You've got Facebook's foundation will grow to garner big power in global capital markets. How much power are we talking about here?
Well, it depends on how big it gets, but I'm making the presumption that this is successful and that at least WhatsApp's 1.6 billion users will probably end up using and signing up for it. Basically, this becomes, as we were chatting earlier, I think it will pretty quickly become a top 20 foreign exchange currency. And so it basically, what just by changing the basket, it can massively move markets. And I'm thinking about the example of the People's Bank of China, which also pegs the yuan to a basket of developed world currencies. And it used to be pretty much a dollar proxy. And then 4 or 5 years ago, they switched to a basket, and they didn't disclose exactly what the basket was. It'll be interesting to see if Facebook discloses the basket weights or not. But what's in there is probably mostly euros and yen and you know, Swiss francs and the like. You know, the big dominant, most liquid currencies. And Facebook's probably going to be doing the same thing. But just by nature of the fact that that basket is something that's set by human beings and not by the market, it's going to have a distortive effect. And moreover, it is going to change over time. And Facebook, in one of the articles, there was an anonymous comment that low-risk securities would be included in that basket as well. So just as with central banks, they're not just buying the government bonds of the countries whose currencies the basket is trying to track. They're now also investing in corporate bonds and in corporate equities. So this foundation, the Libra Foundation, could end up being probably the largest money manager in the world in terms of short-term liquid finances. And this is going to be a market-moving organization. It may take them a few years to get to that status, but I think it's going to happen pretty quickly.
How does the basket actually work? What's actually happened here, like in practical terms? Because I wouldn't understand this.
Well, let's say they set the basket 90% dollars and 10% euros, just to make it simple. What's going to happen is as the dollar and the euro exchange rate moves, they're going to have to adjust that basket, right? So they're going to be trading to keep that basket constant. Then also money's going to be coming in. I don't know how they're going to accept payment. That's one of the big questions. Are they going to be integrated with local banking systems? Maybe that's how they've got the PayPal type relationships, that's the on-ramp into Libra. We don't know exactly how that's going to work yet, but as the money comes in, that basket is also going to be changing as well. You can't just set a target of 90-10. In the real world, things actually move. And you also do have transaction costs. They're not going to be charging their customers transaction costs, which again, I think is a huge threat to the Western Unions and PayPals of the world, because they do charge transaction costs. Libra is not going to charge any. They've already said that. So they're going to be absorbing that because they're making so much money on the interest income. But back to my earlier point, you can't just set a target. In the real world, you have all these leakages and you have, you know, markets that move every fraction of a second. So you're not going to be able to keep exactly 90-10 at all moments of the day. You actually have to trade around it to keep within that target. So this is going to become a very powerful money manager. It's basically going to be like the world's biggest money market fund, or I think more accurately, it's going to be like a private central bank.
Okay, so a global private central bank.
Yes.
It starts
very
to,
powerful.
Very
think
powerful.
About that.
Yeah.
Think about that concept. Very, very powerful. And then another topic that I didn't raise in my Forbes piece, but people have asked me on social media, is what are they going to do with that cash? Are they going to keep 100% reserve?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if there's $1 trillion US dollar equivalent of Libra outstanding, are they going to have exactly $1 trillion US dollar equivalent of assets backing it? Or are they going to do what every other central bank in the history of central banks has done, which is fractionally reserve it and basically create a gigantic CDO at the center of Facebook? And, you know, we don't know that. At the moment, they haven't said anything, but I'm going to be watching for that. And these guys are also probably going to be engaging in repo transactions and other financial engineering that most money market funds do. And there's huge leverage at the center of the financial system, the traditional financial system. And whether Facebook joins in that game or not is going to be something everybody's going to be watching in the financial industry. And I'll be watching it very closely as well to see if this thing is even backed 100%.
Have you been watching or looking much at these node operators and the role they play? And because you did note that some banks will be signing up as node operators.
Yes, it's interesting. The leak that came out on Friday in the Wall Street Journal did not list traditional banks. And so we'll have to see, right? I mean, Facebook is targeting 100 participants in their initial group. And you know, there were some interesting names. Stripe was there. Vodafone was there. Uber, PayPal, eBay, etc. But we didn't see Goldman Sachs. We didn't see JP Morgan. We didn't see Citigroup or Barclays and or, you know, BNP, these global banks. We'll have to see. I even if they're not directly participating in the $10 million node arrangement, they are going to still be major players in this market because they're going to be foreign exchange counterparties to that de facto central bank.
Do you think the banks are going to be scared of this? It's just a real threat to them.
You know, I think they look at it the same way we're looking at it. They see a lot of upside and they also see a lot of downside. I think the one who should be the most scared is Western Union and PayPal and even Venmo, any of those payment systems that charge fees, because this is definitely, in my mind, going to disrupt those because it's feeless. It's not going to charge transaction costs to the user. So anybody who's sending remittances, it's just now so much easier to do it through Facebook. And again, this is one of the things that we all hoped with Bitcoin would take place. I think Facebook, because of its power and scale, is probably going to take off pretty quickly in those markets. And so, yes, some, you know, the big money center banks, like I just named, the, you know, the Barclays, the JP Morgans, the BNPs, the Credit Suisses, et cetera, they are going to look at this as they're gaining a new money market client. And they're going to have huge trading volume with this client. And none of those names were listed in the Wall Street Journal leak on Friday, but I can't believe that none of them will be involved. I suspect that many of them will be.
Okay. All right. Well, your fourth point was, and we've kind of covered some of this, but Facebook will face regulatory uncertainty, but this will shed light on many outdated financial regulations in the process. So again, this is another benefit in that rather try and fit Facebook into the old laws, it might be an opportunity to change regulations.
Yep. I suspect that they will be a powerful proponent for the ridiculousness of having to report capital gains or losses on every transaction to the US government for every customer, right? It's ridiculous. And they may help us tear down these crazy laws that have been standing in the rest of the industry's way. Absolutely. It's like the red flag laws, right? Back when the horse and carriage was supplanted by the automobile, and red flag laws were enacted. And it started in the UK, and it actually hit the US as well. I think the state of Vermont enacted red flag laws. And those things were just basically designed to slow down the disruption of the automobile to protect the horse and buggy carriage manufacturers, right? So the same things are true today. These outdated laws need to be set aside, and it will be helpful to have Facebook to help argue to set aside some of those laws that stand in the way of the rest of the industry.
Do you think this is why they registered the foundation in Switzerland?
You know, I don't know. The Swiss foundation laws have been most useful. I mean, that's where Ethereum went. That's where many of the big foundations went. They went to Switzerland, and I'm not an expert on exactly why. yeah, I don't know why, but clearly they also expect it to be global. And I used to work in Switzerland for Credit Suisse many, many moons ago. And that is clearly viewed as a global neutral financial center. So that was also probably part of their thinking.
Right. Okay. So point five we've covered. Facebook's regulatory reporting program will be open all kinds of interesting discussions. We covered that. Let's get on to point six, because I think this is the one people are going to be most interested in. I've come to completely agree with you that Facebook's cryptocurrency will turn out in the end to be a Trojan horse that benefits Bitcoin. I put it down for a couple of reasons myself. I tweeted about this before. The first one being, just like as you highlighted when we first started speaking, is that we're exposing billions of people to the term cryptocurrency. And it's something people are going to have to get their head around. And if it's also Libra is its own currency with its own exchange rate, then people are going to have to get their head around transacting in something which isn't pegged to their own currency. So that's going to have people starting to think about it. And naturally, they're then going to be exposed to Bitcoin. And as I said to you, I'm quite excited by people being exposed to the Bitcoin versus Libra coin chart, and also therefore most likely the Bitcoin versus pound or euro or dollar chart as well. And then hopefully people will start to see over a long enough time frame that any of their domestic currencies are losing value, and that with Bitcoin is a chance to retain value over a long enough time frame. So that's the bit that really I think I'm excited about.
Oh, you articulated it so beautifully, Peter. That's
I'm not sure I did.
I have nothing to add. Yeah, no, seriously, that's exactly the point. This is, I think, just a detour.
Well, I can quote you.
No, you got it.
I've got your quote here. So people will migrate over time to the most honest ledger for storing their hard-earned wealth, and that's not fiat currencies or derivatives thereof, including Facebook's cryptocurrency, because it's not really a cryptocurrency. It's just a digital fiat currency.
That's right. Yes, even though they're calling it cryptocurrency. Absolutely. Yeah, we haven't really defined what a cryptocurrency is. I think to the folks who are listening to your podcast, most of us would say decentralized, permissionless, censorship resistant, immutable, and Facebook's Libra is probably none of those things, but they're still going to be calling it a cryptocurrency, and that will help. It will help people get used to the notion that it's not national money. And that is a really positive thing.
And then we need to therefore teach about scarcity.
We need to teach about scarcity. It's exactly what Nick Spano said when he observed what was happening in Venezuela. The number of Bitcoin transactions spiked as the government was educating its citizenry on what the petro was and how it was going to be used and how it could be transacted using your phone. And what ended up happening? People went to Bitcoin instead.
I did a really interesting interview with, do you know Jill Carlson?
Yes, she's also been very active in Venezuela,
So I did a great interview with her, Alejandro Macedo, who is a Venezuelan, he doesn't live there anymore, but he's a national, and another guy who worked for IDO, forget the name now, and they actually talked about there's different scenarios in Venezuela that you have to use different currencies. So Bitcoin is useful, but you have to use the Bolivar at certain times, and then other times you need to use the dollar. So people having to actually use three currencies there, which is kind of a bit mad. Okay, I added a prediction in of my own, so I hope you don't mind. We're going to finish on that. Actually,
sure.
Before I do that, do you think there's any remote possibility at all that Bitcoin could form part of the basket?
Ah, very good question. I think over time it will. And I actually think one of the potential outcomes long term is that the entire basket is in Bitcoin.
Wow.
And this becomes essentially just a wallet.
That's amazing. Well, so my bonus prediction that I've added in is that I think there's a potential that Facebook will allow people to buy Bitcoin.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. I don't think they're opposed to Bitcoin. The question is, will the governments force them to avoid it because Bitcoin is deemed to be the bad cryptocurrency? And Libra is deemed to be the good cryptocurrency.
To be discovered. The only other thing that I've kind of outstanding in my mind, and I actually posted up on Facebook this morning for my friends. I'll tell you what I put, because I wonder whether you've thought about this much at all. I put, as Facebook preps to issue their cryptocurrency Libra to be used across Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, and Messenger, please be prepared if you think you might use this. Hacking is a significant problem with cryptocurrencies. You may wish to consider your security practices with your accounts. Be prepared for social engineering, brute force attacks, SIM swapping, and physical threats. Now, I don't know how the onboarding and offboarding with Libra coin is going to work. I don't know if transactions can be frozen, reversed. None of that we know about yet, but I almost certainly think there's going to be a significant number of hackers prepping for Libra coin and how they're going to exploit it, how they're going to hack into people's accounts and start moving around and stealing their Libra. Have you thought about this?
Yeah, I haven't, but you know, I was just ruminating on what I said a minute ago about effectively if the entire thing, if the entire basket is allocated to Bitcoin and this effectively becomes a wallet, all that is a centralized exchange wallet, effectively, right? So. Mm-hmm. If you think about how often both the exchanges have been hacked and how often the users of exchanges have directly themselves been hacked, it becomes the same risk, no question. I suspect that Facebook will have a lot of focus on the ease of use, like private key recovery mechanisms, but they will have to, by definition, have given up some of the security. And that's the reason why the user experience, as we know, with Bitcoin itself has not advanced as fast as we all hope that it would, because there is a security trade-off with user experience, with ease of use. There just is. And so Facebook, I think, is definitely going to be more susceptible to that. That's maybe part of the reason why they think that going in on this foundation where they can socialize their own hacking losses may actually be a good outcome for them as well, that they don't themselves basically face the risk of being a de facto guarantor on that gigantic pool of assets.
All right. Well, I think we probably agree that this is probably net positive for Bitcoin, which is great. But the Trojan horse essentially comes with a whole host of Orwellian 1984 things to consider and worry about, and regulatory mess that's probably going to come out of this as well. And it's going to be a get the popcorn out and watch. But hopefully at the same time, this brings a whole bunch of people into Bitcoin. So yeah, if it's a Trojan horse, that's a great thing.
Exactly. Again, you summed it up so well. This is grab the popcorn. It is amazing, the interest in this. And I suspect this particular podcast will be very popular because there's so much interest in trying to figure out what this means, not just from the crypto industry ourselves, but from the broader public who, for the first time, are going to, in many cases, be understanding exactly what cryptocurrency is. They may have the wrong impression because it is a centralized de facto fiat coin, but it's a denationalized de facto fiat coin, and that's a powerful concept in and of itself. It is progress, much as we hate that it's stilted progress and everybody should just go straight to Bitcoin, but it is progress nonetheless.
All right, well, I will share out the article in the show notes. I will share out the tweet storm as well, but as ever, it'd be great. Just tell us what's coming up for you, Caitlin, and also how people can stay in touch with you.
Well, I am spending a lot of time in Wyoming, and we are going to be working. That's part of the reason I listened to your Decentralized Identity podcast with Daniel Buckner from Microsoft. We are going to be doing some interesting things with identity in Wyoming, and we don't know exactly what. Our next task force meeting is in August. We're thinking about, because Wyoming's been such a leader in innovating business entity forms, we're thinking about, do we need to green light legally a decentralized autonomous organization, or is it just better that we provide real meaningful protection for developers who develop decentralized platforms? And those sort of big questions. So we've got more coming in Wyoming. We're not done yet. And I will end with, definitely look at wyohackathon.io. That's where the Wyoming Blockchain Stampede information is going to be posted. We will hope to have registrations open for that by the end of June. And everybody, if you're curious about Wyoming, think about coming out. You can either fly into Denver and drive or take a connecting flight directly into Laramie. It's going to all be at the University of Wyoming. And I'll end by saying, Kraken is actually thinking, if there's a big enough interest, because Crypto Springs is right after that, they're thinking about actually chartering a plane. So there may be an opportunity for folks to fly directly from Laramie into the Crypto Springs venue. So the more people we end up having in Wyoming, the better the opportunity for everybody. So come on out to Wyoming.
The crypto plane.
The crypto plane. The yeah, crypto exactly. Plane.
All right.
Exactly.
Okay, fantastic. Well, look, Caitlin, thank you as ever. And it was nice to finally meet you in person at the Madrigal Crypto Conference, even though it was briefly passed you in a corridor and said hello. But it was nice to finally meet you. And listen, I'm going to come out to Wyoming. I'll come out to the
I love it.
The week, and we'll hang out properly. And, you know, we might maybe even record again.
That would be lovely. That would be great. All Thanks right. so much, Peter. Best wishes to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so what did you make of that? Caitlin's amazing, right? I love everything she's doing up in Wyoming and just all the support she's given to the industry. She's always great to talk to, and she certainly considers things which I wouldn't have thought about with regards to Libra. I mean, it would never have crossed my mind that they would have to consider paying out interest and what the impact of that is. I think it's definitely going to be interesting, and I'm personally kind of on the fence. I do have this natural distrust for Facebook myself, and I'm not sure how much I will trust Libra, but I can certainly appreciate the benefits it will have for people in developing countries, not only for no-fee remittance, but the discipline it might enforce on central banks in developing countries. I think those points where Caitlin was really important. I also think there's this net benefit for Bitcoin, and as I start to see my friends on Facebook discussing Libra, I know I'm going to be pushing to them the benefits of Bitcoin, and hopefully people will see this Libra Bitcoin chart and see that Bitcoin is probably a better investment, and then will get them down the rabbit hole. So today is definitely going to be interesting with the release of the white paper. I look forward to seeing it and see how it plays out. And if you've got any questions, you want to get back to me, my email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. If you want to support the show, just head over to my website. It's whatbitcoindid.com. Click on the support section. I'm not going to go through all the stuff this week because I've got to get this interview out. But I will be flying out to the States tomorrow. I'm going to be going to Boston, Washington, Florida, San Francisco, LA, Chicago, and New York, all in the space of 2 weeks. So it's going to be a very busy trip. But I hope I will get to meet up with some of you, grab a beer. Anyway, if you want to reach out to me, my email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com.